From Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College,
this is...
This is...
This is...
This is War News Radio. This is War News Radio. I am Selima Bourguiba. This week you will be listening to an interview with Jody Williams on her work with refugees, where she describes the lives of today's refugees and how various organizations are acting in response to the crisis. Jody won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1997 for her work banning anti-personnel landmines and has also recently helped lead a delegation with the Nobel Women's Initiative and other activists in order to help refugees across the Balkans in Germany.
The refugee crisis is oftentimes presented to us quantitatively. There are now 4.3 million Syrians scattered throughout Europe, making them the world's largest refugee population. The UN predicts there could be 4.7 million registered Syrians by the end of 2016. Between 2 million and 3 million Syrian children are not attending school. In the midst of all these numbers, we often forget that each of these statistics is an individual person.
I am a refugee.
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 I'm a refugee.
I'm a refugee.
I am a refugee.
I am a refugee.
I am a refugee.
To understand this conflict on the ground, like each unique refugee, War News Radio interviewed a woman who walked along one of the routes of the refugees, Jody Williams.
My name is Jody Williams. I received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1997 for my work banning anti-personnel landmines. And for the record, I shared the Nobel with the International Campaign to Ban Landmines, which I helped found and I coordinated.
Jody Williams recently helped lead a delegation with the Nobel Women's Initiative and other activists. The delegation traveled through the Balkans and ended in Berlin, Germany. They met with refugees as well as governments, organizations, and individuals that were helping refugees along the way.
And there was one young woman in particular who was very emotional at times about, you know, when she would see things happening to the refugees, how they were treated. When she would listen to organizations like the UNHCR, UN High Commission on Refugees, you know, talk about all the wonderful things they were supposedly doing, and yet when you were in the field, you didn't really see the fruit of what they were doing. And that kind of thing really agitated her. And one day we came back from, I think it was when we came back from the border between Serbia and Croatia, that when we got off the bus, she was just kind of standing there shaking. And I went up and asked her if she was okay. And she, you know, her eyes welled up and she just said it brought up so much of her own past as a refugee and, you know, how difficult it was.
Jody met refugees specifically on the Balkan corridor to Germany. In recent news, public statements from officials in many Balkan countries demonstrate a questioning of current refugee policies. Macedonia, Croatia, Serbia, and Slovenia have announced new restrictions on refugees. Only refugees who wish to seek asylum in Austria or Germany will be allowed to enter these countries and continue their journey toward Western Europe. That's public statements. So what is it like actually in these countries?
Croatians were the best. I mean, they had a systematic way of moving them through the country. They had put up nice shelters for them to wait because they would take the train from the Serbian border to the shelter and they would get processed there and registered and all of that and wait for the next train that would take them into Serbia. In fact, it was the Minister of the Interior himself who was there every day, really committed to working with, you know, everybody on the route, making sure it was seamless. But in Serbia, they were treated terribly. There was no systematic Serbian system. If they made it, you know, from Turkey, to Greece without drowning, and then through Greece and Macedonia to the Serbian border. It was just regular commercial buses that they would get tickets for to get to the border with Croatia. And they were extorted at every level. I mean, tickets that would normally cost a Serbian person like 10 euro, they were being charged 40 or 50 euro. But then when they got to Slovenia, it was horrible again. Even though the Slovenians were, the government was moving them through, it was very militarized. When they got to one of the train stations where they were getting off buses to get on the train to go through Slovenia, the cops were just harsh and fierce. Move, move, move.
It is not just countries in the Balkans that have demonstrated shifting refugee policies. Germany, one of the most refugee-accepting countries, has recently proposed tightening legislation for refugees. Angela Merkel, Germany's chancellor, pushed for a bill that would lower the crime threshold to deny the right of asylum to refugees. Theft and robbery are examples of crimes that would cause removal.
Germany has been the most open. They did have shelters and, you know, registration, and were really struggling to set up programs that would integrate, you know, the refugees, not turning them into Germans. But, you know, if you really are resettling to a country, you should be able to speak the language, have training to get a job, you know, normal things so that people feel part of a community. But they were struggling, and some people criticized them for that. I think some criticism is valid, but at the same time, they have received so many people in such a short period of time and so unexpectedly that to anticipate a fully, you know, full-blown system of dealing with them is a little unrealistic, in my view. But Germany was definitely the most humane.
Along the entire path, a combining factor from beginning to end in terms of refugee treatment is war profit. Robert Krepinko, the head of the Organized Crime Unit at Europol, the European Union's policing arm, said there is a growing number of networks that in the past were dealing illegal drugs and are now shifting to people smuggling. Refugees' misery, which makes them easy prey for people smugglers, is part of a global phenomenon that produces almost $26 billion a year, according to Al Jazeera. Furthermore, the exploitation of refugees strips refugees of their sense of personal agency. It disempowers them and makes them feel utterly dependent.
Are exploited by the human smugglers, which are different from human traffickers. The smugglers are trying to smuggle the people from Turkey across the Mediterranean to Greece. They cram as many human beings onto rubber boats as they can, charging anywhere from $1,500 to $5,000 a person to get on the boat. And then they just push the boat off into the Mediterranean and flee themselves. So they don't even accompany them. Can you imagine? You arrive like totally devastated, fleeing your home. You're carrying everything that you can in your hands. That's your life. And you get pushed into the sea. I think, honest to God, I would totally freak out. Who on the damn little boat would know where to go? How would you know how to get across the sea? We were told about how much the smugglers collectively make a day in smuggling. $9 million. And there was one small group of men who had left Iran that we talked to in one of the shelters. Shirin said to them at one point, why didn't you just buy a rubber boat yourself and set out? It would certainly be way cheaper. And they said that people had tried to do that, but the smugglers would jump in the water and slash the boat and make it sink so that you have to use the smugglers and they can, you know, exploit you to death, sometimes literally.
In a survey of Syrian refugees in Europe, only 8% of the refugees reported that they wanted to stay in Europe indefinitely. 52% said that Bashar al-Assad would need to leave power before they would return home. The numbers indicate that it is not only the journey which is arduous for refugees, it is being in a place where a majority of refugees do not want to be. All refugees are uprooted without warning. They experience the trauma of war, and then they have to live in a new society. Jody explains the difficulty of this for one Eritrean woman in particular.
The Eritrean women, all three of them had been raped several times in their journey across North Africa before they got on the smuggler boat to make their way across the Mediterranean to finally end up in Germany. And in the shelters, there were no locks on their doors. They were not clearly separated. Women in one area of the shelter, families in another, men in a different part of the shelter, so that they would feel somewhat secure, and especially without locks on the doors, etc. They were very traumatized, from what my colleagues said. And one of them was talking about the trauma of the journey, and the feelings of insecurity still have made it difficult to impossible for her to focus very well on her German lessons. You know, she's so stressed out and PTSD and everything that she said, I know I have to learn German, but I'm just having a hell of a time focusing on it. We sent a letter to the UNHCR after the delegation stressing the need for adequate shelters that separate single men from single women. There does need to be counseling for the refugees who want to talk about the trauma. We really believe that there should be interaction at the community level, not just, you know, the government from on high trying to implement programs by itself. You know, that if you really want people to feel like they might have a future in your country, in the towns of your country, there should be programs set up at the town level where, like, citizens could volunteer to teach.
A refugee experiences unimaginable loss and pain. It is something that we cannot represent in numbers or even words. Pain resists language and communication, but that does not mean that people all over the world are powerless to the refugee's plight.
Find reputable, smaller non-governmental organizations that are working with the refugees. You know, the mammoth monsters like Save the Children and CARE and the UN, they get money. So much of it goes to their own administration. It's not that they don't do good, but the small NGOs that we met along the route, they were doing so much with nothing. I mean, it was just mind-boggling. They're the ones, in my view, that would benefit the most from any kind of support. If people were interested in knowing some of the NGOs we met along the route, they could send an email to info@nobelwomensinitiative.org. One of the ones that I particularly like is called Hand to Hand for Syria. It's run by one of the women who was on our delegation. She's a British Syrian woman who goes back and forth from the UK to Syria, risking her life, as you can imagine. Physicians for Human Rights in Boston and New York is another that is doing fantastic work trying to continue to provide medical services when the whole medical structure has been destroyed. Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, they do really good work.
A recap of the organizations Jody listed are Hand to Hand for Syria, Physicians for Human Rights, and Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Many organizations like these are working to help refugees on the ground. There have also been increasing strides in international policy resolutions as world powers have agreed to seek a nationwide cessation of hostilities in Syria to begin in a week's time after talks in Munich, Germany. Through a mix of global policies, statistical reports, and the essential remembrance that this is a human conflict, the world continues to find solutions to the refugee crisis. For War News Radio, I'm Anna Weber.
War News Radio is a production of Swarthmore College. Visit us online to listen to archived shows, learn more about our program, or subscribe to our podcast. That's warnewsradio.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter to keep up between shows and let us know what you think. I'm Selima Bourguiba. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.